Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
But as Cormac said, there is a cabinet meeting about to begin in about half an hour from now. Large-scale expectation is that level 4 coronavirus restrictions will be imposed on counties Donegal, Cavan and Monaghan later this evening. And of course, all this comes after Northern Ireland tightened its COVID restrictions. All pubs and restaurants in the six counties will be closed for 4 weeks, schools for 2 weeks, and only essential journeys will be allowed. The majority of those restrictions come into effect on Friday. But Northern Ireland's Deputy First Minister Michelle O'Neill is urging an all-island approach.
I think that whilst there has been a memorandum of understanding, so cooperation across both jurisdictions, it isn't enough and it isn't sufficient. If we're going to fight back against COVID, then we need to be doing that on an all-island basis. That's not a political point, that's a purely medical scientific point. The advantage we have as an island has not been, in my opinion, optimised over the fight back on COVID. So I would like us to see us doing more of that in the time ahead. We're certainly up for that. It is the only way we're going to be effective in the challenging weeks and months we have ahead of us.
Now, Cavan has the highest incidence of the virus in the 26 counties at the moment. The Taoiseach, the Leo Varadkar, has also raised concerns about the incidence of the disease in Donegal and Monaghan. Junior Minister for Gaeltacht and Sport, Jack Chambers, has said that he expects restrictions for these counties as Northern Ireland is a COVID hotspot in Europe. Meanwhile, Minister for Arts, Catherine Martin, says there's real concern in her home county of Monaghan and indeed in other border counties too. Meanwhile, the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, is expected to make an announcement tonight confirming that Donegal, Monaghan and Cavan will move to level 4 from midnight tomorrow. But the government is still insisting that schools will remain open around the border despite the decision to close them in the north. Here's Health Minister Stephen Donnelly.
I am in favour of keeping the schools open. I received a comprehensive report about a week ago looking at the positivity rates in schools versus the community, and the information I'm being given is that the schools are safe within the context of a world where we have COVID. So for example, the positivity rate in the schools is 1.9%. It's now above 6% in the community. We're seeing in Ireland, as we've seen right across the world, low transmission rates between children and indeed low transmission rates between children and teachers as well, which is all very positive. Within the COVID framework, the plan right up to and including level 5 would be that the schools stay open. So the whole approach of the framework is to say, as the rate of the virus increases, we have to prioritise our social interactions. And what we're prioritising is schools and childcare and colleges, public health services.
Well, we will bring you more on that story as developments, or if developments, emerge throughout the course of the show. That cabinet meeting, as I said, is expected to get underway from about 5 o'clock. And as he prepared for that meeting, I've been speaking to Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman, and I began by asking him if we should follow Northern Ireland by closing schools for 2 weeks at midterm.
I don't. I think it's always been my strong belief, and it's a belief based on the medical evidence that has been provided both in Ireland and internationally, that schools aren't a significant source of transmission of COVID. And we've also seen the very significant mental health impacts that the closures of schools had on children and young people during the peak of COVID earlier in the year. And certainly everything that the government did over the summer, All the steps we took were designed to ensure that schools could reopen in September. It's certainly my sense that that has gone very well. Where there have been instances of COVID in schools, the public health advice has been followed and the situations have been managed very effectively. Okay. So certainly I'd be extremely reluctant to do anything as regards closing schools. I really think we, for the sake of our children across the country, we need to keep them open as long as it's possible within public health guidelines.
Okay, can I ask you then about the budget yesterday? The biggest, most ambitious budget in the history of the state is what we've been told, and yet no additional investment in a public model of childcare. Did you ask for any additional investment in public childcare?
Well, my focus in this budget was absolutely focused on the protecting the most vulnerable children in our society. And that's why I looked for a very significant increase in TUSLA, the Child and Family Agency, and got an extra $61 million invested into TUSLA, which will support children in care, which will support women and children at risk of domestic violence, will allow us to take more unaccompanied minors from crisis spots like Lesbos. As regards the area of childcare, next year we'll be investing $638 million in early learning and care and school-age childcare. And we'll also be continuing to support childcare providers through the employee wage subsidy scheme. When we passed the July stimulus earlier in the year, I got a sectoral exemption negotiated for childcare providers to make sure that we could support them as there was, I suppose, questions over whether they'd have the same number of children looking for childcare as people were coming back following the lockdown. So I think that's been very successful in keeping childcare open across the country.
The childcare providers, as I'm sure you're aware, they're not happy. I mean, the Early Childhood Ireland, for example, among the various organisations which voiced their discontent over the last 24 hours, they said budget shortcomings leave providers and parents to once again pick up the pieces of a broken childcare model. I'm wondering, did you ask for additional investment in the public childcare model, or did you just focus on, as you say, the areas of the most vulnerable?
We need to ensure that government money, when it's invested in childcare, goes to ensuring that childcare professionals are better paid and to ensuring that parents aren't paying as much for fees. And we've put large amounts of money, or previous governments have put large amounts of money in before, and those two objectives haven't been realised. The fees have stayed high and childcare providers have continued to receive low wages. So my department is working on a new funding model at the moment to make sure that when the government puts additional money into childcare, that can be absolutely targeted at achieving those two key aims: better pay for our childcare professionals and lower fees for parents. And that's the focus of the department this year. That new funding model will be in place for the next budget, and at that stage we'll be able to continue to expand on the very significant amount of money that's invested in early learning and care, but make sure it gets good results for children, for parents and for childcare professionals.
All right. Can I ask you then about a topic that is under discussion in the Dáil and the Seanad today, and that is the Mother and Babies Home Commission and the records associated with that. A lot of controversy and upset from campaigners about the intention to seal the records of the Mother and Babies Home Commission for 30 years. Can I ask you firstly, what is in these records?
Well, I think the first thing to make clear is that this legislation is not putting anything beyond reach, has been reported. This legislation is all about preserving invaluable information. The Commission, in its work over the last number of years, have created a database which will allow the tracking of residents of the homes. So women who went into the homes, had children, which homes they entered into, which homes the children were moved on to. So it's a really valuable database. And what we are seeking to do is protect that database from redaction, because the Commission believe, under the current legislation that they were constituted under, they believe that they have an obligation to redact some of that personal information, some of the personal records that this database was constructed using.
And we might get onto that database in a second, because just for listeners who might be a little confused, that's the database that this legislation plans to move to TUSLA, and
yeah,
it will
exactly,
be available
yeah.
to people under FOI and things like that. And we might get onto that in a second. But the rest of the records then will be sealed for 30 years. And I'm asking you, what is in those records? For example, does it include information about how the system of forced family separation operated?
Well, as I said, the commission was formed under the Commission of Investigations legislation from 2004, and the commission is bound by that particular piece of legislation. And that legislation requires that all the commission's archives, which would be all testimonies given to the commission, all written submissions that the commission received, will be placed in an archive and sealed. field for a 30-year okay. period.
And so that's does it under include information
legislation.
About, does it include information about how the system of forced family separation operated? Is that
well, it would include all information that the Commission received in the context of their investigation.
Okay, so would it include, for example, information about illegal trafficking, illegal fostering, illegal adoptions, and how all that operated?
Well, again, if it was information that was brought to the Commission in the context of their their investigation, but obviously the
would
Commission
include,
will
Minister,
be publishing.
Sarah,
just
if you could just
let me address the question. All of this information will be part of the Commission's report, which will be bringing out at the end of this month. Mm. All of these issues that the Commission has been investigating across this time will be contained in their report, and it's going to be an incredibly detailed report. I gather it's going to be over 4,000 pages of information, and importantly the testimonies of those primarily women who went before the confidential committee, those testimonies will be published as part of that report in anonymised format. Mm-hmm. So everybody who went to the confidential committee and gave their story will actually see their story expressed within the context of the report.
But the Commission, as you say, any of these archives should include information that the Commission would have gathered as part of its investigation. So you would imagine it would include information about how forced family separations operated, about illegal trafficking, illegal fostering, illegal adoptions, medical histories of the children, records of how the children died, where they were buried. What is or who benefits from those archives being sealed for 30 years?
Well, I absolutely agree. There's a question about, and it's a question worth exploring as regards what is the long-term future of archives like this. And I suppose what I've been trying to emphasise, though, to the many people who've been engaging with me and indeed with TDs over the last number of days on the legislation that we're addressing at the moment, is that this legislation does not. This legislation is not about the sealing of the archive. This legislation is about protecting a really valuable tool that has been created by the Commission and which can be used in the future when we provide for information
and
tracing legislation.
And I do want to get onto that in one
and
second.
I've made a commitment to legislate on that.
Just finally then, in relation to the database that is transferring to TUSLA, and that's the legislation that's going through the Seanad at the moment, I'm just wondering how confident anyone can be that TUSLA will give people access to that information, because there's obviously been a lot of controversy over the last 2 or 3 years about how TUSLA has been treating or reacting to people who are looking for their personal information. For example, this is the same body that last year it was revealed is not giving some adoptees access to their first name at birth or to their place of birth, because they're saying that's third-party information. So if that's their approach to information and release of information, how confident can people be that they will give access to this new, very important database?
Yeah. Well, look, I think the main problem for TUSLA in doing so is the lack of proper information and tracing legislation. TUSLA is bound by our existing what's provided for in the 2010 Adoption Act, which doesn't really provide for a strong scheme of information and tracing. It can do certain things, and when former residents of mother and baby homes and other institutions ask for something more, something I think they should be provided with, and I think the vast majority of people think they should be provided with, and TUSLA says no. Usually it's on the basis that TUSLA are operating under the current very restrictive legislative scheme. So what we're trying to do with this legislation is protect the database, and that database then, when we bring in an improved information and tracing scheme, that database will be incredibly useful to facilitate survivors of these homes tracing their mothers, but also tracing perhaps siblings as well.
All right, Minister Roderick O'Gorman, thank you very much for joining us this evening.